citizens' relationships with the police and sheriff of this vicinity. We're starting a bit late, and I want to repeat, please, if you're on the agenda to speak tonight, please come up to the table and be here. When we started our organization...
Excuse me, don't to be on the agenda to speak this evening.
I'm going to particularly invite you during the speak out, public speak out, okay?
And Miss Hilden?
Yeah.
Will be on the agenda as well.
Sarah, right.
To speak out against an Officer Baker who is a pervert and a violent, not nice person for the whole community of any society.
I think we understand.
Never mind being a police officer. And let that be put down in words by any journalist here, right now.
That's fine.
Now.
Brian is from Ireland.
Excuse me. I am a citizen of the world.
Very good. Even
and any person that would do that, what he did, in Arabia, his hands would be cut off.
True. Very exacting law.
Put that down in a newspaper.
All right. As I said, folks, the actions of some of the police in this town, I don't have to give you examples. This man is giving you an example. He and his girlfriend have been the subject of a newspaper report and television report this week. His girlfriend was sexually harassed during the search by Officer Baker on the street, the same officer who sexually exploited a couple of other women in a motel raid, ostensibly against drugs. People's rights are being violated. I'm not going to stop anybody from coming up to the mic. I hope the rest will be in a more orderly fashion. So we started 9 months ago, and I've been receiving reports over the hotline, which we publicize by grassroots methods. And the types of complaints started from homeless people. Then we began to notice a pattern among black young men. We began to notice the names of certain officers cropping up with regularity. We began to notice that low-income women, welfare mothers, are another target group. If you don't have a regular job and you don't have big financial credentials, you yourself could possibly be forced to submit to something that's quite untoward. Another group that's under duress are young Hispanic males who are often forced to submit to blood tests. There was one instance where seven men held down this individual in the jail to take a blood test over a drunk driving charge. These are very unpleasant police state tactics. In Monterey County, it's illegal to take a blood test by force. Similarly, in Santa Clara County, the Human Relations Commission can go into the jail at any time, unannounced, and have an inspection. We don't have anything. We don't have anything like that in Santa Cruz County. And I mention that because some of the people who called me on the telephone have been in the jail in Santa Cruz County. Believe you me, that's an evil place, particularly if you're a black young male. There are things that go on in there, denial of medication, wrong treatment of people with epileptic seizures. I'm talking about some serious civil rights violations in this county. And we've got to force ourselves to deal with these matters head on. Because we're running late, I'm going to move now to the first speaker of this evening, who is Julianne, herself a homeless mother who had bad experience together with her young daughter over here.
Good evening. Good evening. Can you hear me? I'm going to read a speech I read in front of the Women's Organization for Violence Against Women just recently. My daughter and I are a homeless family within the current AFDC guidelines. We live in our camper on our truck. It took us 2 years to save the money to purchase our camper. This seemed the way out of unsafe and substandard housing renting from slumlords. On October 24th of this year, we were asleep, parked in a cul-de-sac off Mission in front of the Trescany Community Garden. Two police cars pulled up, kept bright lights on us, woke us, ran a check on our plates, and proceeded to inform us that sleeping within city limits is illegal. They requested we move on at that time. It was a cold and very foggy night. I felt it would be entirely too risky to drive off and park ourselves beyond any means of calling for help should someone dangerous happen upon us out there. We received $535 a month to cover housing costs, transportation, food, and clothing. We cannot afford a campground at $10 a night and still meet our nutritional needs. I have two ideas that I hope will be adopted by the Santa Cruz City Council to provide a safe place for low-income county residents who live in their vehicles. One, Lighthouse Field has a paved parking area, night lighting, a phone and bathroom facilities. Make this area available to low-income county residents living in their vehicles between 8 p.m. and 8 a.m. to be put into effect immediately as a safe place to sleep. Two, to coordinate with the state and city parks to allow low-income county residents to do a work exchange for camping privileges. The Wilder Ranch parking lot just north of city limits would be a safe place adequate for meeting our needs. Thank you all for your attention and hopefully your actions to see an unfair camping ban revised. The police are enforcing a law meant to keep the tourist glut of Winnebagoes, etc., from congesting the city. They need a clause inserted to allow them to recognize and treat with dignity the struggling poor in this city. In this season of goodwill and the spirit of compassion, let's brainstorm to create a nonviolent alternative. Thanks. I'd like to close with a haiku I wrote. Each of us homeless, blind roots entangling others, nests threaded toxins.
Thanks, Julia. Yes?
Could we close the door so it can be quiet in here?
Will people close the door? Thank you. We're often called Berkeley by the Sea, and I only wish we could live up to some of the energy and organizational sense that the town of Berkeley has. Recently had a good time up there myself, supporting the Uhuru movement and the People's Park. You know, this is by way of introduction of Suzanne and Lisa at the end of the table, who are two of the activists with an organization called Cop Watch that actually monitors police activity on the street. We'd like to get something like that started down here, so please listen carefully to how they did this.
I'm Suzanne, and I just wanted to tell you a little bit about how Cop Watch got started in Berkeley. We've been around since March of 1990, so we'll be coming up on 2 years. In the beginning, it was really a response to, there were a number of different pretty excessive cases of police abuse in specifically the south side area of campus is the place that we do most of our monitoring. One incident was at the Bears there, which is at a kind of a bar on campus, and there was a party for the black fraternity on campus that was taking place there. There was a fight between two men that ended up being broken up. It's kind of a long story, but broken up by police that came in and ended up kind of breaking up the entire party and beating up more than just the two people that were in the fight. That was one incident. And the second incident, soon after that, was at Barrington, which is a student co-op around the campus. It had been officially shut down, but there were people that were still squatting the co-op. And by orders of the co-op president, the police moved in and really injured a lot of people and, you know, threw everybody out. And then the third is more of a general thing of just the consistent attacks on homeless people in the Southside area for sleeping in public, for drinking in public, for being in public. You know, people getting tickets, people getting just, you know, harassed and you know, told to go away, people getting beaten up. So in the beginning, there was a number of people that came together, people that were just, you know, concerned about what was happening, students that were concerned about what was happening, came together to try to figure out what we could do in response to all this harassment. And one of the things that we came up with was that the police needed to be monitored. So we kind of had a lot of discussions about how we'd like to go about doing that, started to collect more information about there's two police forces that we deal with in Berkeley. There's the University Police and the Berkeley City Police. So collecting information about those police forces, about laws and ordinances that were impacting the people of our community, just trying to get in touch with legal resources in the community, things like that. And then, you know, after many discussions and trying to figure out how to go about doing this, we decided what we wanted to do was have people go out in shifts on the street, a cop watch shift. And generally what those are, two people would go out together, usually for a 3-hour shift. On the back table, we have copies of the incident report forms that we use. On those, if you see a police officer stop somebody, we approach the scene and we record as much information as we can possibly get. So all the information we can about the police officers, about why the stop was made, if we can, you know, find out, you know, if there are other witnesses around, things like that. And so doing those reports, there's several things that come of that. The fact that the police know that they're being watched at that point, and also the fact that we're offering the person who is being detained or arrested, you know, some resources if they need witnesses to a case that they're going to have, or if they want to file a suit against the police. We've been doing the shifts since March of 1990. A few months after that, we began putting out a cop watch report, and we brought some different copies of that. We put one out every other month, a cop watch report. In that, we put specific incidences of things that we've seen happen to people, and then also other interesting tidbits about the police in the area. The idea of the cop watch report is to educate the community, in addition to having the police be monitored, but to also make people in the community aware of what's going on if they don't frequent the Southside area of the campus in Berkeley, or, you know, they just don't know what's going on at all. So that is another thing that we've done. And then we also got an office after a bit of fundraising. We got an office in the area that helped us to be able to be more of an organizing tool in the area, so that we participated in a vigil that was taking place in People's Park to save the free box in the park that the police came in and tore down, I believe, 6 times, and we rebuilt it for the final time it stood. So Cop Watch was there, you know, participating in that vigil. We also helped organize a march that was in protest of Ocean Newman, who will speak later. He was assaulted by two UC police officers, and we helped to organize a march protesting that. And then a few months ago, we had a forum on police brutality in Berkeley that was addressing the question how to stop police violence. And although we didn't answer that question, a lot of good information came out of that. So I guess that's about it for the history of the organization. Lisa is going to talk about some more specific ways to Cop Watch that can either, you know, can be used by anybody if you see the police stopping somebody.
So we kind of came up with these in the car driving down here. And the most basic thing that we really thought of is that it's totally impossible to make a protocol, that every situation is totally different, you know, and that basically what you need is you need to be alert alert and you need to use your common sense and you need to learn from your mistakes. And just kind of start watching. You know, it's easy to start by standing there and just kind of watching. And saying something, you know, if someone gets hurt, say, gosh, do you really need to cuff that guy so tightly? Is it really necessary to hit him on the head to get him into the car? Kind of verbalizing what's going on. You know, and it's really your right to observe. And the cops can always say that you're interfering, and that's a way to get you out of the situation to arrest you. And it's really easy to just say, I'm observing, I have no intention of interfering, unless you want to interfere. And interfering is a legitimate thing to do. You can unarrest someone. You can put yourself between the person that the cop is beating up and the cop so that you who aren't really part of that situation are going to get it, and maybe the cop is going to realize the craziness of usually his actions. And that you really are just doing something by standing there. You know, cops are a lot less likely to be out of control if they realize they're being watched and being recorded. And the other thing is that it's really important to be sensitive to the person that's being arrested. People feel weird being gawked at, and it's really important to identify yourself, to say, hi, I'm just watching what's going on, I'm making sure that you don't get hurt. Or if you're starting an organization, hi, I'm Lisa, I'm from Cop Watch, I'm just writing down what's going on. So if you need to file a suit later, you can contact us. You know, stuff like that. If you want to file a complaint, I'll be a witness, I see what's happening. The other thing is talk to, if the person that's getting arrested has friends around, you can talk to their friends. You know, you can say, gosh, what's going on? Do you know what this person is being picked up for? What's their name? What's a way that we can contact them? Here's a way for them to contact us. You know, so if their friends want to tell them later how to get in touch with you. The other thing is don't ask, it's a good thing to get the person's name that's being arrested, but make sure not to ask them unless they've already told the cop that information. You don't want to lead them into giving you any information that they wouldn't have already given the cops. You know, you don't want to put that kind of information thing in a dangerous thing. The other thing is it's always nice to ask people if they want you to make a phone call for them. It's a courteous thing to do. You know, it lets you be helpful in a situation. Recording information, taking pictures, writing down badge numbers. Even if you're not sure right then what you're going to do with all the information that you're getting, it's never a bad thing to have too much information. So really take down all the information that you can. The other thing is talking to the cops. You know, asking them what's going on, why this person is being arrested, what the charge is. But it's also important to be smart about when you're asking the cops. You know, the first priority is the safety, the well-being of the person that's being arrested. So maybe when they're not right in the act of doing something, it's not good to... It's not a good thing to talk to them right then, but either talk to them when they're off to the side or something. And also not letting your politics and your feelings about the cops endanger the person that's being arrested. That you need to make sure to have a certain level of, I guess I want to say courtesy, you know, towards the cops and towards the people that are being arrested. And another thing that we found that we really like is if the charges are really blatantly ridiculous, it's kind of a good thing to talk to your partner really loudly about it and kind of, you know, get that across to the cops. Like, you could say, hey, Suzanne, you know, have you really heard about someone being cuffed and taken to Santa Rita for not having a bike light?
No.
You know, and then maybe they can, it can be, they'll kind of get it that what they're doing is ridiculous. And the other thing is that the cops aren't fucking up in every situation. That if you come late to something, you know, that an incident is already in progress by the time you get there. It's not a good thing to kind of jump in and start harassing the cops. It's a good thing to talk to the people around, if there are people around, or just kind of get a feel of what's going on. Because it's going to make you look really stupid, it's going to possibly endanger that person, and it's going to make your organization look really stupid. And what else did we think of? The other thing is don't lie. If the cops ask you something, tell the truth. You know, concealing information is what they do, it's not what we do. And it's really important to kind of set a precedent by being upfront, by being honest, by being clear. And kind of part of that is that a policy that Cop Watch has made is not to be stoned, not to carry weapons when we're doing shifts, not to carry drugs, not to do stuff that's gonna endanger us, endanger the reputation of Cop Watch. We made this whole other list of things, of kind of how to start a cop watch, but it seems like that's really happening here. We have a lot of literature on that back table. Again, we have our handbooks, which is kind of how to, a part of training people to become cop watchers. And I guess there's also going to be a question, a period when a question and answer kind of thing. So, seems like you guys are doing good.
Thank you. Thank you. Those sound like very, very practical tips based on experience. And I sense a real strong commitment from these people who've come down from Berkeley, Lisa and Suzanne. Susan.
Suzanne.
We're going to have a song now from Mark Levy, who is a performing artist, recording artist. What label do you?
Nuclear.
Nuclear recording. Just before he sings, I'd like to say, after him, you're going to hear Osher Newman from the Berkeley Police Review Commission, and then Ray, you're going to be after OSHA.
Well, we're hearing about police brutality not only in California, Berkeley tonight, Santa Cruz also, but police brutality all over the country is on the rise. I've got a song I brought with me. It's called the LAPD theme song.
Excuse me.
I figured that...
Santa Cruz, I can that, sing your song too.
Excuse me. It's called the LAPD theme song because I figured since they had a video, they needed some music.
What's wrong with Santa Cruz?
And, you know, Robert Gates really hasn't, or Daryl Gates, rather, hasn't decided whether or not he's going to step down next April, as I said he was going to. You know, this is a guy who said that all casual drug users should be shot a few years ago. He also said that black people were more susceptible to the police chokehold than quote-unquote normal people. This is the police chief of Los Angeles. And of course, at the Rodney King beating, he made a statement that it was regrettable, although he thought it might help change Rodney's errant lifestyle. So this is a song I wrote for Daryl Gates. It's called the LAPD theme. I half expected to go down there when I was in L.A. last and see some new billboards along the freeways that read, "Support your local police, beat yourself up." Instead, I wrote the song. What's gotten into our men in blue that's making them overreact? Is there something about wearing that badge that they do that makes them just want to attack? Or could it be rookies who prove overzealous? Perhaps we should ask, why this rough stuff now, fellas? We're hopped up cops at the donut shops, drinking hot coffee and soda pops, watching four motorists run in stocks, so we can go practice karate chops. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine. If we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better complain in the LAPD theme. Up against the car, did you hear what I said? Hands in the air or I'll smash your head. You better get on the ground or you'll wind up dead. You're gonna be sorry you ever sped. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine. Better come clean with the LAPD theme. Now you can bet your bottom dollar on the donuts I've eaten, but your black butt is gonna get a beating. Go ahead, sue if you think we're mistreating, and we'll take it up at the next planned meeting. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine. So all you junkies better come clean in the LAPD. Up against the car, you hear what I said? Hands in the air or I'll smash your head. You better get on the ground or you'll wind up dead. You're gonna be sorry you ever sped. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine. If we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean in the LAPD. Thank you. watch your step, you criminal slime. Whisper on the prowl, get tough on crime. Get your cameras ready, get your lights online. Cause we're all pumped up for prime time. Coffee is old, out of sugar and caffeine. If we don't get it, we get lean. So all you junkies better come clean. CLA. Sugar and caffeine, we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean. C-L-A-P-D-P, it's the L-A-P-D-P, it's the L-A-P-D-P. Now, there's nothing like Mark Levy in this county for warming people up. Mark, what's the name of your new LP or tape or whatever?
Oh, Shiro's Heroes.
Heroes?
Yeah,
Heroes. Okay.
They're over there on the...
They're on display somewhere on to the left. I'm going to call now on Osha Newman, who is a person doing what we want to happen in this county. We want a police review commission to be established here, and there is a coalition that's trying to do that. I go to the meetings. There are others in the room who do. It's a multi-organizational coalition. Osha got on the Berkeley Police Review Commission, and things were going quite well for him. And then he himself became a victim of police abuse while he was holding office as a review commissioner. Give me a chance to move this.
That's all right. I'll move over there if you want.
I don't think I exaggerated, did I?
No, I was. Not exactly holding office at the time I became a victim myself. I was just being ordinary, I guess. I don't know what I was. I am a lawyer. I go to work in a, when I go to court, I go to court in my gray suit that I got at Goodwill and a tie and shirt that I got there also, and my shoes are shined, and you know, I have a briefcase and stuff, and generally I'm not abused by the police. And this particular occasion, however, I had the misfortune of being dressed more or less the way most of us in this room are dressed, I guess, and I had the added misfortune of being in People's Park in Berkeley, which I guess is identified by the police in Berkeley and the good people of Berkeley at that time as a den of iniquity and a home for homeless, dereliction, and terrible place in general. And at the time that this incident befell me, I was actually suing the University of California, its police force, because it had done on a number of occasions a act which I think kind of characterizes the situation. There were a lot of homeless people who were essentially not living in the park anymore because they'd been kicked out of the park, but they were living on the median strip, which is a strip between the sidewalk and the street. It's like about this wide, this table. And at night, people were lined up all along this strip, you know, with their carts, with their possessions in them. And what the University of California police did at 6 a.m. in the morning on a number of occasions without any warning is they came with, first thing people heard was the rumble of these big, you know, these garbage trucks that, you know, come, they got these compactors in the back and they go, and they take all your stuff and they compact it down. So they came with these trucks at 6 in the morning and basically went up and down the line, taking people's possessions and throwing them in these trucks, destroying them. And with them went a person's Bible that was like a family heirloom that had like the history of his family in it, and a wedding ring of a woman whose husband had died of a stroke shortly before then, and radios and baby clothing and basically a lot of people's worldly possessions. And I sued the University of California around this because the basic principle that we were trying to establish, which is also the principle of police review, is that you can't just take people's stuff without some reason, even if they're poor, and even if they're homeless, that that stuff is as valuable to them and as worthy of protection as Donald Trump's yacht or anything that anybody has, you know, as a home or anything. Now, that's not a very radical suggestion, you know, that everybody has a right to their property. That's just, you know, the law. But it is extremely radical, in fact, in this society, to treat the people on the bottom, poor, the homeless, the hungry, the people who are most desperate, in the same way that you would treat the person on the top. And I sit on the Police Review Commission, and often we have people come in and they have complaints about discrimination and so on. And one of the kind of mental tests that I use when I'm listening to those complaints is, would this have happened to Lonnie Hancock, who's the mayor of Berkeley? And if it had been Lonnie Hancock and not that person out on that street in that corner, and I decided those cops would have acted differently, then I use that as my guide to decide whether something was wrong or not. And believe me, a lot of times I decided it wouldn't have happened to Lonnie Hancock. If Lonnie Hancock had been out there with a briefcase at 6 in the morning, believe me, it wouldn't have gone in the garbage can. So that's like, you know, that's not news. I mean, that discrepancy, I mean, I've only been here in Santa Cruz now for a few minutes, basically, but, you know, I've heard, you know, stories already that, you know, are reminiscent. People are arrested for, you know, aggressive panhandling. One person told me for asking the chief of police for a cigarette, which is, seems like a foolhardy thing to do. But, you know, one person told me, I guess he did this in Berkeley, that he got arrested for yelling, "Die, yuppie scum!" On the street. Well, we can all stand here and yell, "Die, yuppie scum," here or anywhere we want, you know, and basically it's protected by the First Amendment. As long as you don't have a knife in your hand and there's a yuppie scum right in front of you, then it's not protected because then it's a real threat. But normally it is, and yet we all know perfectly well that you're at risk if you act weird or odd on the streets of practically any city in California. What happened to me in the park on the day that we're talking about is that I was there talking to people. I'd been called up because I got in a call from a woman named Terry, who's a Native American woman who's homeless, who at that time was living a lot in the park, and she called me up and she said, "OSHA, they're saying that they got a new rule. They're saying that it was November. It was getting a little cold at the time. They're saying that if you're inside your sleeping bag, you're lodging, and it's a crime. But if you're on top of your sleeping bag, you're not lodging. That's not a crime. What do you think about this?" I said, "Well, they're making it up. I mean, it's a little hard to believe they're actually telling you that, but I will come up and see what's going on. I'll talk to the cops and see whether actually genuinely with a straight face they're going to be able to tell me that that's what they're doing." So I came up and I talked to this police officer, and by God, that was actually the rule which he had decided and been told by his superior officer that if you are, that lodging is, by the way, a crime now in the penal code. Nobody knows what it means. I mean, what does lodging mean? I don't know what it means. They don't know what it means. I mean, to lodge, I mean, you know, you go to a motor lodge, you know, you pay your money, that's lodging. You know, you threw your frisbee and it lodged in the crick of the tree, that's lodging. You know, what in God's name is lodging? Nobody knows, which makes it the perfect law for police who want to harass people. Because a law that nobody knows what it means, and that can mean anything, it's perfect for harassing people and for making up weird and outrageous rules, like the rule which, you know, was just then being enforced in the park. So I went up to this cop, and sure enough, he says to me, "Yes, I was told by my superior that if they're inside the sleeping bag, they're lodging, and if they're on top of the sleeping bag, they're not." I said, "Well..." And I went and told people that, and then I was sitting down and we were talking about the absurdity of life, and I saw on, not that far away from me, two people sitting on the bench. One of them was a homeless person named Jimbo, whom I know, who I was representing because, in fact, he was one of the people whose stuff was taken in that raid that I was talking about, that 6 o'clock in the morning raid. And so, you know, the cops were standing in front of them, and, you know, they were sitting on the bench, and I couldn't quite figure out what was going on. So we said, "Well, let's go over and watch." Let's watch. Let's cop watch. You know, I mean, these folks have made an enormous difference in Berkeley. They really have. I mean, people, you know, trust cop watch out on the street in this amazing way and really rely on cop watch. And it's like they've added a new word to the English language in Berkeley. Let's go cop watch. You know, it's like one word. Nobody did that before. It's like a whole consciousness that's spread through Berkeley because of the work that those folks are doing. So it's been great. So we went over and we cop watched. And, you know, I, because I'm a lawyer and I've been 6.5 years in the Police Review Commission, I'm often called on to do trainings for people who want to do cop watching, you know, about the law and what you can't do and what you can do. And I've actually spent a bunch of time researching it, you know, so that I don't tell people something that's wrong, you know, and what's resisting arrest and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And we do a little role playing. So I thought I am pretty on top of cop watching. You know, I know what my rights are. I'm not confused about them. I have a pretty good sense. And also, what they said earlier was absolutely right and is also basically my practice on the street, which is you don't, the situation is usually insane and tense enough when cops are involved that you try and yourself be cool and together and gathered and rational and keep your eyes out and don't inflame the cop. Am I going over?
Very briefly about how it works.
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to get to how it works. Let me just get finish this story and I'll tell you how it works. You want to know how, they want me to tell you how the Police Review Commission works. I will get to that very fast.
Okay.
Anyway, I went up, I was watching from the safe distance. The cop turned around and said to me, you know, get back or I'll shove you back. I said, you don't have to talk to me that way. He then turned around and shoved me. I walked around in front of him, so I was 10 feet in front of him. I asked him for his badge number. They both, at that moment, came at me, knocked me on the ground, pulled my hair, ground my face into the earth, and broke my rib. That's what happened to me on that particular day. These were not, okay, now what do you do about it? I'll get to what you do. What do you do about it? This was the University of California Police. There wasn't a goddamn thing you could do about the University of California Police. They don't have a review board that makes any sense. I sued the bastards. And I'm going to sue him, and I'm going to get some money out of it. That was the only thing that I could do. And I'm awfully lucky that I'm a lawyer, and there were 8 witnesses, and the whole thing was totally absurd. Most often, you can't. Okay, suing isn't the answer. What is the answer? There isn't any one answer, but one of the things that we have in Berkeley that really does make a difference is civilian review of the police. That is, a place where you can go where any citizen can go and you don't have to go to the cops and complain to them, which is like a chicken walking into the fox's den and say, you ate my sister. You know, no one's going to do that, right? You don't do that. This is a place where anybody can go, where there are citizens, where there is an independent investigatory body, people who are not cops, who have a very simple process where you can go in, you can get your complaint, you write it down in a real simple form. You have it investigated independently. You have a commission that has the ability to require the cops to hand over the police report, the communication center tape, to come into your office and be interviewed, the ones who did it and the ones who witnessed it, and then holds a hearing. That hearing isn't the way, like internal affairs hearings. It's not private, secret, you know, closed off to the public. It's open to everybody. The press, your friends, you or whatever. The cop is there, you are there, the cop gives his story, you give your story, actually you give your story, the cop gives his story. You get to cross-examine the cop, and the cop has to answer your questions. Officer, why did you put me in a chokehold when all I did was ask this guy for a quarter? Well, I didn't put you in a chokehold. Well, what do you call putting your arm around my neck and squeezing so I lose consciousness? Well, you know, you get to do that, and then we get to decide to make a decision. That is an amazing institution in the world, to have that. To have that kind of accountability is an amazing thing. In one sense, it's not very radical. All you're asking is for the police to obey the law. You're not actually asking for the laws to change. That you may do some other place. You're not asking for a whole range of things. You're not asking them to stop being police. You're not asking them to stop catching murderers, rapists, robbers, burglars, all those people that we, in fact, feel threatened by, the things that we want police to do. You're not asking for any of them that. You're asking them to obey the law and apply it equally to all the citizens in the town. It's not radical. It's something that you should be able to sell to a broad range of the community if you do it right. They will try and peg you as crazies. It's true. It is also, you know, in some ways one of the most radical things you do, because it is speaking truth to power, and it is empowering the poorest and the least powerful in our communities. And that's something that's well worth doing. I've got a lot of ideas about how you can do it, you know, the different problems and so on. Maybe we can talk about that at a later time, but I really appreciate being able to be here.
Thank you. Okay.
The heroic aspect of America that we need to restore. You can't be a proud and honest citizen unless you're going to stand up for it. It's better we stand up together. I did see one question out there.
Yeah, what happens if it's outside of Berkeley, like in the Bay Area? Say it doesn't happen to you in Berkeley, say you're in San Francisco inside.
You mean if you're a visitor up there?
Well, you mean if this happens in San Francisco with San Francisco police? We don't have any control over San Francisco police. We can only do City of Berkeley police. We can't even do UC. But San Francisco has a civilian review process.
They have one.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they have one. It's called the OCC, the Office of Civilian Complaints. I can talk to you about it at length if you want. It's somewhat different, but it is pretty good, and I can... Yeah, no, they do have one.
Okay. We will get into question and answers about other civilian review procedures, and if you want to ask those questions. We have one more speaker, though, before we get into that open section, and this is Raymond Grunick, who's an attorney who's done more than anybody in this county to protect the rights of homeless and low-income people. He's in those courtrooms night and day, and